Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I present this program on an emerging culture of consciousness, I would say, and a work in progress as we evolve towards a greater sense of ourselves. And tonight's guest is someone very much, I feel, involved in this movement of consciousness, especially as it relates to what we'll be talking about, exoconsciousness. Tonight's guest is Rebecca Hardcastle. She's a pioneer in paranormal experience and research, and she specializes in exoconsciousness, a word that she coined. And we'll be talking about ET intelligences, origins, the dimensions, and our abilities as human beings to expand who we are. Well, Rebecca, thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you, Alan, and hello to all your listeners.
Well, you know, last night I was in the middle of New York City in this park called Bryant Park, and we were watching Close Encounters in front of 10,000 people on this lawn.
God.
It was really fun. And so, and then also today or this week, the British Ministry of Defense just released their some of their top-rated information on UFOs. Did you hear about that?
I heard about that, and also on BBC, I believe there was a breakfast morning kind of today or tomorrow show, morning show, and there was an ET sighting during the show.
Really?
A UFO sighting. I shouldn't say. I said ET sighting. What the heck?
Well, maybe they will cite some.
They all are. So.
But maybe everything is changing. Because it seems like I met you recently at the EXO conference, EXO Politics conference. So do you think the American public and the world public is getting ready for our interactions with these beings?
I think that there has been a massive acclimatizing of Americans and on a planetary-wide scale also of getting us ready for contact. And it's been growing with great acceleration, especially over the past year, I believe.
Mm.
And
getting us ready
to continue to accelerate.
I mean, is it about getting us ready for, I mean, Stephen Bassett, the head of the conference we were at, said it makes a distinction between disclosure and contact, right? Disclosure is what the government has, and that, you know, tops against. Contact is when the ETs sort of come forward and say, hey guys, we're here. So I guess it's happening on both ends, it seems like to me. Right.
Well, it has to happen simultaneously, and I think if you look back to the Brookings Institute back in the 60s after Roswell in the late 40s, you know, Brookings came out and said that, you know, religion was going to have such a difficult time integrating extraterrestrial visitation and contact, and you know, subsequent thinkers have said that, no, it's going to be the scientists that have such a difficult time with contact, and I think all that's been set aside because every institution is dealing with this subject very proactively now, and it's shifting all the parameters of what we know to be true, not only about our institutions on Earth, but also about ourselves as humans. And that's one of the reasons that I got so involved with exoconsciousness. It seemed like that was a particular piece that called me. How are we as individuals changing in all this, and therefore how are we going to change the institutions of Earth?
Well, exactly. I think consciousness is very much involved with the subject. You know, it's sort of, you know, the mind in the early 20th century, Freud and all those people took into account this idea of the mind. But when we say consciousness, we're actually including something bigger than the mind, bigger than the hardware of the brain. I mean, consciousness is, it depends on how you look at the universe, but it's sort of like the source of all things. I mean, how would you define consciousness?
I would define it in very similar manners. There's a David Chalmers, who's one of the outstanding 20th and also 21st century philosophers, talks about the fact that consciousness is literally a property of our reality, that everything participates in this property of consciousness, and which goes to all living things. And I think as we learn that in terms of quantum physics, that everything is energy and information, everything comes alive and has an aliveness to it. And we begin to think on a quantum level in much the same way that our Native American ancestors or indigenous people have always viewed the earth as alive and conscious, and also the universe. And I would also say what's happening in terms of disclosure, that Barbara Hanclow, the famous Mayan thinker and
astrologer,
who works with Callahan, she talks about the fact that from 2009 to 2011, we are literally going to be waking up as a galactic civilization, worldwide, planetary-wide, that we will begin to see ourselves as a universal society in space.
Well, I do think whatever happens in 2012, the focus on it is our relationship to the galaxy. So whether or not anything happens, it's changing the fact that we live in a world that is related to a galaxy. So in that sense, I think we are becoming galactic in our awareness.
Absolutely.
And I think the other thing that's so important in your work is how we understand the UFO phenomena. So when I saw Close Encounters last night, I felt, well, they got some of it, the superficial part, but it really is a change in the way we are thinking about ourselves. It's a thought. I describe consciousness more as a medium, as a sea of awareness. Mm-hmm. I've had ET experiences, and they do not exist in the same realm as ordinary consciousness. There's a non-ordinary quality to ET interaction. I think that's something what we should talk about, but also make people aware of. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I agree with it. I think Linda Moulton Howe and probably somebody before her coined that term about the paranormal, and they called it, quote, the high strangeness.
Yes.
And once you've had contact, then you begin to look at life in high strangeness. It's interesting. I was reading the press release from ABC with talking about Stan Romanek and being on Primetime Live, and he was talking about the fact that all of the visitation that he had gone through, he felt literally, according to the quotes of this article, so I don't know, you know, what exactly was said in the whole context of the interview, but that he felt as though he was being quote, chased by ETs.
Is that going to be on
work,
tonight, that Stan Romanek?
I think it's on tonight.
Oh, okay.
And I think, you know, when you look at, you know, whether or not you as an experiencer and me as an experiencer, you know, what I'm interested in is in exoconsciousness is how do we begin to integrate that experience into our lives where it begins to have meaning and benefits to us. And one of the things that I've dealt with more than anything is to look at how we filter ET contact through the filter of trauma. There's two.
Right. Well, it is traumatic when you're confronted with.
It's traumatic.
Yes, when you're confronted with some.
See everything that way.
Well, I think that's part of what exoconsciousness is about, in my opinion, is understanding that other realms of reality, and that's why I call this show New Realities. It's, we exist as multidimensional beings on other states of awareness. I think
we also exist not only with a bipolar brain, but we also exist with a unified brain. And that is what I believe that humans are moving toward. As we learn more about trauma, as we learn what actually happens to with people who are traumatized, I've been really fortunate to be here in Phoenix with where three leading traumatologists are doing their work, and I've worked some with them and just learned an amazing amount of what happens to us neurologically when we're traumatized. It could be
well, tell me about that, because I'm actually researching what happens when people are particularly traumatized by an ET encounter. What happens to them?
Well, it's not just ET encounters. It's any kind of abuse that we come through in life and experience. It literally scars our brain.
And what,
Dr. Robert Scare is one of the primary traumatologists in the
What's his name? Robert what?
This is funny. His last name is Scare.
That's a great name for a traumatologist.
I know.
S-C-A-R-E? How do you spell that?
S-C-A-E-R, I believe.
S-C-A-E-R.
I know. Don't you love the names life gives us?
I guess. I'm glad that's not my name. But anyway, what did he say?
Well, he believes that all psychopathology and disease is literally rooted in the scars on our brain.
You mean it physically scars the tissue of the brain?
Yes, neurologically, physically scarred. And so, unfortunately, our ancestors, including, you know, John Mack, when he was working with experiencers, just about the only thing that you had to deal with in terms of the scarring, and John Mack called it fencing the fear, some of the only things that you had to deal with were talk therapy or just kind of some kind of spirituality. Like
well, there's hypnotherapy, though, too, the hypnosis.
And there is hypnotherapy. And today we are finding that there's amazing 21st century technology that can overlay our brains and actually help us either dissolve those scars, which I do a lot with clients in hypnotherapy, but it also allows us, if the scars don't dissolve, we can then make a new neural pathway.
What happens when the scars dissolve, and what happens to the experience? Is it integrated?
You dissolve it and let it go, and you release it. It's gone.
Because we've all been scarred by trauma in some way.
Absolutely. Literally, these people, these scientists that are integrating technology and consciousness and science to research trauma, they can look at the scars on your brain that you have accumulated over your lifetime, and they can tell you what kind of diseases you're going to have.
Really? That's amazing. How do they repair scars? How do they do that? How do they heal that?
One of the ways that they're doing this repairing of scars is, ironically, through shaking.
Shaking.
They found that through researching animals, Dr. Scare primarily with polar bears found out that if you keep a polar bear in captivity and imprison it and don't allow it to shake, that polar bear will not thrive. If you free that polar bear to shake after a trauma event, that polar bear will thrive and move through. And so David Berselli, who is here in Scottsdale also in Phoenix, what he does is he rents space and brings troops back from Afghanistan and Iraq and teaches them protocol to put their bodies in positions where they literally shake. And in a 21-day regime of shaking, they can start to break their post-traumatic stress trauma scars.
And then they don't have to act it out. Is that what you're saying?
They don't have to act it out.
Well, that is great. That's amazing. But getting back to, like, the topic of ETs, I think what is so traumatic for people is that they're encountering a reality that doesn't fit in with their worldview, what John Mack called ontological shock.
Yes.
And if we could have more of an exo-type consciousness where we know we're galactic beings or part of this greater civilization, we wouldn't be so shocked and traumatized.
Absolutely. And movies come out from Hollywood like District 9 where, you know, there is a deeper message under District 9, but also the movie is full of trauma and fear, you know, especially for that audience of, you know, adolescent age students and kids that go to see movies like that. I mean, it's,
yes, but
it's
how
scary.
Do we become more exoconscious? Because if you see, and I say anybody who would see an ET, you know, a typical ET with the big eyes in front of them appear, you know, through the wall or through the window, or you're levitated out of your bedroom or out of your car, that's just how they've been dealing with us, and that is traumatic. I mean, how would one deal with it?
It's traumatic until we learn how to calm ourselves down and
uh-huh.
understand that we are seeing this event through our trauma scars and through our fears.
Mm-hmm.
And once we get we achieve a unified, balanced brain and some knowledge about what some of these different species and extraterrestrial beings look like, it's not such a scary thing.
But the other part that I was getting to in the beginning is there's a shift in actually the way reality is. This is my theory. I haven't heard anyone else except maybe Whitley I talked about it with. The way reality is cognized is changed when you're in the company of these beings. Do you
Absolutely.
Know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's also hard for people to deal with.
Well, it's also hard, I think, because science doesn't deal with it either. Our science isn't dealing with multi-dimensional reality or multiverses. Science is just now tiptoeing up on, you know, maybe there really wasn't a Big Bang.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
And if you think about Big Bang cosmological theory, I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
our theory of creation. What does that say to our culture? Trauma,
right.
War, violence, fear. I mean, the name itself.
Well, some of the scientists I've been interviewing, Nassim Haramim, do you know Nassim?
No.
He's going to be on Coast to Coast tonight. He says it wasn't a Big Bang. It's an ongoing creation. You should
yes.
listen to Coast to Coast.
Ongoing, gentle creation that we
well,
can...
it's not always gentle. There's
no,
some,
but...
like, when, you know, things collide in space, or it's not always gentle. I mean, birth isn't always gentle, you know.
No,
I mean,
birth isn't always gentle, but you don't... it's not always violent either.
It's not always traumatic, yes.
Yeah, it's
yes.
not always traumatic. And so I think as scientists begin to, I know I went to a talk the other day here in Phoenix by Paul Davies, and he, at the very, very end of his talk, because he spent his entire academic career as a proponent of Big Bang, at the very
mm-hmm.
end of his talk, he began to speak about the multiverse conception of cosmology and creation. And as our scientists begin to discuss that, then,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, ideas of holographic universe or zero-point energy and begin to understand black hole theory, then we, as citizens of planet Earth, get more comfortable with it also. There just seems to be a large confluence, like you say, of people coming together and figuring this out on many, many levels. And I completely agree with you that when you have contact, you learn to live and be and create alternative reality.
Well, they actually appear, I think, as an effect of being, like, have you ever been in the presence of a really high spiritual teacher or like a high, your mind actually changes. You're in the field. It's really field dynamics. So you're in the field of these beings and you start to have a clarity. But when you're in the field of an ET, their world perception, their conception of reality is so different that I think you have to be very, very conscious in order to stay aware, because it'll warp, in a sense, this is my theory, the human perception, because their field is so much more dynamic and different and bizarre than anything we've conceived of. So
I agree with that, but I also feel
yeah.
that humans, if you look at alternative forms of historical research, there's a great possibility that humans were seeded on this earth by several, if not many, extraterrestrial races. And
yes.
if that is true, then we have within us the ability, the conscious ability, and I believe not only conscious ability, I believe that we have a DNA ability to resonate to that field of energy that they're in, and understand it and communicate.
I totally agree with you, and this is why your work is so important, but we have that ability, but it's been so educated out of us from, you know, childhood. We've been taught to think this is reality. And, you know, sometimes in presentations I do on perception, I show that video of the people playing basketball, and there's this gorilla that walks through, and I say, just count
right.
the facts. And no one sees it because they haven't been taught. No one told them to see that reality. And
right.
then when I pointed out, people are shocked. They say, and this is what's happening all the time. So we have this ability, we have this innate ability, but we have been so conditioned by our education to be unaware of these levels of reality that do exist. You know, William James, though, was into it in the early 1900s. That statement he says that you know, we are separated by countless levels of alternate reality, by, you know, all we have to do is think about it and it's there. I forget the exact quote, but he knows that it's there at the slightest kind of turn of perception.
And also, he was.
Yes, he was very evolved. And you know who was also a great teacher in this is Jane Roberts, the Seth books. I just read the nature of the psychic nature of reality. It really divides up how we, you know, this event, this waking event, is only the result of countless worlds that we actually do exist in, that come to us in dream states and all that. And
I'm a true believer that because we can, as extraterrestrial hybrids or whatever you want to call humans,
mm-hmm.
that we are not only able to live in these different extraterrestrial realities and understand them at varying levels, but that we are also able, because of how we've been constructed biologically and consciously, that we can start to create new realities that have probably never been lived in before. And
well,
I think that's one of the things that planet Earth is moving to right now.
Well, let's talk about that, because that's really the theme of the show that I've been doing for the last 10 years. How would we then create these new realities, and what would they look like, and what would they feel like?
I'm such a strong proponent of this whole extraterrestrial reality possibility. One of the things that I was involved in was to be a co-founder of something called ET Vote Now.
Uh-huh.
And we began to brainstorm just as a group of people that were committed to their extraterrestrial hybrid nature, to saying that, you know, we have been, as Michael Sciala has researched so intricately, we have probably been having treaties and diplomatic relations with our government and extraterrestrial races since, you know, the early 50s.
Well, yeah, at least since 47,
If that is true, that we have had these formal relationships,
mm-hmm.
then via the Eisenhower administration or, you know, whatever, that if that is true, then how do we then begin to create a new extraterrestrial reality where we have open diplomatic relations?
Hi, Rebecca. Sorry about that. They just said you were a little low. But you were talking about bringing that into reality.
Oh, extraterrestrial reality. Right.
Yes.
And I am a proponent of not only creating these forms of reality, but I'm also living a committed life where I am, on a personal level and on an individual level, committing myself to what it means to be extraterrestrial. It doesn't take very long, and I'm sure you've done this, to go through the material of contactees and supplementing it with what your own contact has been, to get a pretty clear theory and understanding and applicability to what it would mean if you were an extraterrestrial. You would have a balanced, unified brain,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yes.
You would have all of the paranormal abilities would be completely normalized,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, absolutely.
You would be able to move energy in a very healthy, vibrant way, correct? And that would mean that you would be accessible to all forms of healing, okay?
Yes.
So you wouldn't need anybody's government health plan because you would be healing yourself. Mm-hmm. And furthermore, you would be living as a post-centenarian, if not into a lifespan of a millennium.
So what has to happen for this kind of shift in consciousness to take place?
I think people have to be committed to it. I think just like with anything, if you intentionally believe that these are possible for you and live in those energies, that comes to you. And I think that's bottom line what this whole shift is about, and that we are modeling these lifestyles for each other.
So we have to then start to educate people that this is a reality. This is the way of the future. We have to start to institute programs where people can have this as a practice almost.
I like the quote by John Lear where he said that, there's no spacecraft there's no mass landing going to take place anytime soon. You know, it's all been orchestrated one contact at a time.
Well, I do agree with that. I think there's that poem by Emily Dickinson called about Dazzle Gradually, and I think it's about...
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
I think it's a 200 or 300 year process that we're in that eventually it's like, oh, of course, It's what Schopenhauer says. All new ideas are first ignored, then ridiculed, then accepted as fact. So it's like that's what we're heading towards.
And I think the number one responsibility, I would say, from an exoconsciousness point of view, is each individual's personal life. What kind of choices, lifestyle choices, mind choices, attitudinal choices, are they going to make every day of their life? And then
does that relate to exoconsciousness? What ordinary life decision would they have to make that will shift that?
Well, I think they very definitely need to look at their diet. I mean, that's an easy one right there. They need to look at what they believe is possible in terms of changing and strengthening their DNA and transforming their DNA, such that they live longer lives. I think how they look at the medical care complex, is it medicine, is it health, or, are there other forms of healing that they might want to be, participating in? And at some point, Alan, I would venture to say, and that time I believe is coming quite close, that there is a line of demarcation. And you either live in this advanced 21st century exoconscious reality, or you don't.
Mm. Well,
the other day I was watching. They had some people at the Iowa State Fair, and it was on CNN, and they were talking about health care. And behind the camera were masses of people that were so overweight that they could barely walk.
That's America. That's shopping malls.
That is. And I thought, what kind of choice every day is that about our diet? Whether it's the movie Food, Inc. or whatever. What point does the switch go on? And it doesn't matter what the health care plan is anymore. What matters is the decisions that I make every day about my diet and my lifestyle. And most importantly, probably, the relationships that I have with other people. Are they based on trauma and the Big Bang, or are they based on love and affirmation and trust and moral integrity?
Well, I really like the approach you're taking to exoconsciousness because, that's a sort of revelation for me. It's not just about believing and knowing there's extraterrestrials.
Yeah, it's not about standing outside and looking at the stars and seeing a UFO craft or, reading the latest book that's put out. It's really about, though all those things, I think, are part of the consciousness awakening. But you come to some point in this field, and I'm sure you've been there, just like I have. You come to a point in this awakening where you've read all the books, you know all these ideas, you've had the experiences, and now it's time to implement them into your individual life.
But we have. I know I have. I'm very conscious of what I put into my body, of the environment,
yeah.
my connection to the earth. And so are you, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
And I think that as we, as an exoconscious race, evolve, that literally when people start telling secrets or being abusive or going into some kind of trickster mode, you get it right away. It's very obvious to you.
But
it's
something
like
has to happen collectively,
anymore.
I feel, like we're still this side of exoconsciousness. We're still on the kind of very limited way. I mean, you can't even mention ETs or, without getting some kind of snicker. But it's changing. But we're still, I feel like, of course it starts with the personal self, but I feel like there's more, maybe we need to form the national committees or something, get it into Congress or, I don't know, I feel there's more we can do.
I completely agree with that, and I've always been, I mean, throughout my life, I've been a political advocate, and you know, I believe that exopolitics is a movement as well as an education, as well as exoconsciousness, I believe, is a lifestyle. And I think all of those are important. And it's daily there's just a flooding of information that affirms exoconsciousness and exopolitics. I mean, could we ask for a better moment in history?
No, this is the moment. This is the turning point in our
history.
Historic record, and it's very exciting.
We are being flooded, literally
yeah.
flooded every day with information and personal experiences. And
well, I think it's actually going to be an exoculture. That's something
yeah.
I came up with at the last exopolitics
yeah.
conference. So we're moving into an exoculture where we'll have this civilization that expresses its art as an exo relationship. You know what I mean?
I think artists personally are probably one of the pivotal groups, and that's why I love when Stephen Bassett does the X Conference in DC. He always features artists and how artists are integrating and representing the extraterrestrial experience. And the artists that you know, I mean, I think that artists are, and probably poets,
mm-hmm.
are the people who are giving us the peaceful and evolved ways to begin to see ourselves as extraterrestrial and exoconscious.
Well, artists have always been at the forefront of change
absolutely.
And transition
mm-hmm.
and new realities. They, Ezra Pound said that the artist is the antenna of the race. So they pick up new ideas, new information, and they bring it into a form that other people can then recognize what the artist has cognized. That's my theory of art
yeah.
and creation.
And whether it's, you know, what we're going to look like as a hybrid extraterrestrial race in the future, because, Alan, you know, if we begin to make these exoconscious choices about what we put in our minds and what we put in our bodies and what we put in our hearts and how we behave toward each other, the look of humans is going to change. We're going to look different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think
that's
we are looking different. But the other side of that, is that I think, especially with the grays, is that the grays are also here to get some human consciousness. They're here and they are abducting people and taking genetics because they need to feel what it is to have compassion and love and desire. And I think that's our part in this vast galactic cultural exchange program that's going on.
And I also think that grays and, you know, whatever races were involved in that have also taught us in terms of harvesting DNA and cloning and fertility treatments. And, I mean, if you look at how women are having babies today, that's
you mean
very
more consciously.
Obvious. Yeah, that we are consciously becoming extraterrestrial. If you look at almost every segment of our society, whether it's physics and looking towards zero-point energy, like in the work I do with Edgar Mitchell, or if it's medicine and doing cloning and fertility treatments and test tube babies. I mean, all of those speak of our extraterrestrial nature.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the work with Edgar Mitchell and the search for zero-point energy. Do you know what Hal Puthoff is doing at the Austin Research Institute?
You know, I really haven't followed Hal so much. I think our group works primarily, we do work some with Hal, but it's primarily been with Bernie Haish.
Oh, Bernie Haish.
Who we've worked with for zero-point energy.
Well, tell me what you're doing. You're looking to find energy from the vacuum. Is that what you're doing with Edgar Mitchell?
Yeah, we're doing zero-point energy and trying to make it applicable then toward automobiles, rocket ships, and airplanes. In other words,
well, you have to look at the work of Nassim Harmim. He knows how to make mini black holes that generate a huge amount of energy. I mean,
and it's
a serious physics.
Neutrinos and all that specialized scientific research that's going on. And I believe personally in my heart that all that is being aided by our extraterrestrial nature. I mean, it's
no mistake that
Edgar Mitchell and the father of American rocketry, Goddard, both lived in Roswell, New Mexico, down the street from each other.
Right. Well, I'm going to send you some information about some of that, and I would love to read that.
Thank you.
It's amazing stuff because we have that technology. It's here, and I've seen proof of it, and it is part of what runs the cosmos. I think all civilizations, as they reach a state of maturity, realize zero-point energy.
And I think that all of the black hole research that we're doing also is. We are on the threshold, I believe, of discovery as to the questions that we've had for ever since, you know, perhaps mankind that of our history has walked the earth in terms of what happens after death. And I think a lot of those answers are going to be filtered through and understood through black hole technology and zero-point energy.
You mean the evidence of spirit, that there is a soul
that
lives on?
Yeah.
And how does that relate to black holes?
I think that research is integral in any kind of afterlife research. What happens on the boundary of a black hole?
Spiritual, but where does the black hole, like physics, come into a spiritual understanding? That's what I'm interested in.
Well, some physicists are actually looking at that, at, you know, what actually happens on the perimeter of a black hole as it forms, and looking at that in terms of life after death. And
the scientific things
that are happening with, you know, our research, and because, I mean, black holes started out as being, you know, the eternal vacuum that was going to, you know, traumatize all of us and suck us down. And now,
right.
You know, just in a few years, the science has radically changed in that. I think science and spirituality are merging rapidly.
Well, that's why you have to see Nassim's work, because he is the one scientist that I found that understands that on a very specific level. I mean, he says there's only two forces in the universe, electromagnetism and gravity, and the interactions of those produce a black hole, and this black hole, this point of singularity, is in the center of all things, going from atoms to suns to galaxies to the universe itself is one giant black hole that we're just seeing the event horizon on. And so these also exist on spiritual dimension, I think. I mean, I don't know if he said that,
absolutely.
But I think
it's all related.
In each one of us, I think the thing that generates the life force in us is actually the black hole, this pulling in of energy and this spewing out of energy.
Mm-hmm. And I would say in the afterlife, possibly also. I think there's so many possibilities opening right now that it used to be in academia that you came up with a theory and then spent your life proving it. and gathered all your colleagues around and, you know, wrote your grants and wrote your papers and got your tenure and then, you know, continue with your accolades in your academic career with, you know, whatever scientific theory you were proposing, whether it's, you know, string theory or Big Bang or whatever. And that's just not true today.
What is not happening today in academics?
I think what's happening in academics today is that scientific research is moving so rapidly, you know, whether it's with, you know, satellite telescopes or mathematics or brain research in terms of, you know, what are the quantum properties of the brain, that to be wedded to one cosmology or one opinion, maybe a religious opinion of creation or a medical opinion of the body and how it operates. I mean, that's literally academic suicide anymore because...
Well, the Big Bang Theory is a religious opinion of creation. It's just like in the beginning God created the universe.
Yeah.
I mean, that...
Yeah.
We haven't really gone much further than this, except the new physics is showing us that each moment is created and destroyed. Mm-hmm. And so we are changing our understanding of these old realities. And I was reading today something,
Terry Mansfield, the woman that I'm co-director with her with Edgar Mitchell's Quantrek. We're co-directors of Peace Acts of Consciousness, and she sent me an article about using advanced life therapy that scientists and physicians are using to literally go in now and clean out wounds, finding that with very gentle, loving pulses of light that the cellular tissue literally regenerates itself.
Right. Well, you read the book The Field, right? They talk about the work of Karl Popper saying the cells actually retain light in them. That's why I think sunlight is actually good for us, you know.
Sunlight is good for us.
Yeah, I know. It's become a whole... I think it's much worse for you to put sunblock full of chemicals on your skin than it is to have
natural
sunlight.
We are a vitamin D-deprived race. I think that's been shown. And so if you're in medicine, I think, you know, light therapy. And then there was an article, you ever read Daily Grail? There was an article on there about kind of like a Harry Potter type laser optics where they're finding out that they can literally make portals in time and space that the human eye can't see, but they still exist.
How do they do that? What's that from? Where's that?
It was with some kind of laser optics that they've been experimenting with, and they're looking now that, you know, that this is all a possibility. And I would also submit that religion is based on a lot of extraterrestrial abilities, you know, in terms of the ability to heal, the ability to transfigure. Transfiguration is just basically... you know, your cellular makeup decomposing and then recomposing and becoming a body of light, whether you're going through a wall with an ET or whatever. I mean, religion is based on extraterrestrial-like abilities as, quote, miracles that we all were, you know, in jaw-dropping awe of. And now we're, you know, growing up from that and saying, well, we can do that. That's a possibility.
Right. I think it's the end of the age of religion, really. If this exoconsciousness and consciousness in general will take the place of what's been called God, and to realize that we are all these conscious, aware beings that are equal to all of creation. I mean, there's no extraterrestrial that you will meet that's greater than you in consciousness.
Right.
We are all of the same kind of source. We're all made of consciousness, conscious awareness. They might have greater capabilities.
It's so funny that I was kind of literally gifted with this phrase to sort of nurture and raise and learn from, because that was my whole background. I went to theology school. I'm a philosophical theology major, and I was ordained in the United Methodist Church. I had a whole career in the church. I mean, I worked as an ecumenical chaplain at a university for many years, and I always worked with, you know, Catholics and Jewish students, and I was...
And then how did you break free of that? Because you must have been sucked into it at some level.
You know, on a level I was, but there was always another level that I wasn't.
Uh-huh.
I was always a kind of a fringe sort of straddler. I always knew that there was a reason that I was put into this reality, that maybe that was part of the work I was going to do and I needed to understand it. But when it, I did have probably a year or two where I began to view the church very, very differently after I moved from Dayton, Ohio to Phoenix, Arizona. And just decided that a complete spiritual path was the way for me. And I'm very comfortable in churches. I'm very comfortable with the language. I understand everything that goes on in them. And yet, you know, I am of I'm a spiritual being.
Right.
And I did have some kind of difficult times. I mean, some guilt and some questioning. And I mean, I went through all that. Actually, I talk about that in my book, Exoconsciousness, Your 21st Century Mind. I talk in a chapter or two about what I went through.
Well, you know, religion is such a terrestrial consciousness, and where we're moving into is exactly what you're talking, beyond that.
Except when you look at really the roots of religion, whether it's Hinduism or Buddhism or Christianity or Judaism, I mean, actually the roots are extraterrestrial.
Well, sure,
I mean,
if you look
you
at
know, the Hindu... Oh, it's
yeah.
been, yeah, it's been changed, but really when you look at what their root system is... It's a star knowledge root system.
It's star
and
knowledge.
Maybe that's is what's going to happen. Maybe religion is actually going to transform and begin to strengthen its root system of star knowledge, whether it's, you know, the Vedas talking about the flying craft or...
Well, you know
the
word temple? The temple means reflection of the stars. So
yes.
They had the idea... that we were connected to someplace else, and they lost that connection. It became a political power controlling organization. That's what religion.
And that may change. And
well, it is changing because I think we're bringing the new a spirituality to the world. This is part of it.
Mm-hmm. And yet, I think regardless of whatever field we're in, you know, whether. You know, you and the media, and certainly with the art field and with consciousness. I mean, I think we all need to be respectful, whether it's government or, you know, educators or whatever. We all need to be respectful of where each other comes from and, in a sense, highly respectful of, you know, what their fear systems are and develop, in this kind of bridging time, develop a relationship of trust and mutual respect. That's something
but,
that
but
I
it
very,
just,
very
just interested. Like trauma that's been scarred on people, the sort of imprinting of religion and the indoctrination of ignorance
yes.
is so deep in most people that they're afraid to break out of what they call their faith. And I think we need some intervention is what I think.
I totally agree. I don't think that whether it's in a family and you have an intervention in terms of drugs, I mean, that's why families do such good intervention, because the person that is in the intervention needs to trust their family members.
But religion is the same thing. We need that intervention as a drug, because
yes,
it is a drug. So when you say be respectful, I understand what you mean, but
Because if we start to demonize or disrespect or categorize, then we just re-traumatize everybody. Everybody
well, that's
gets
true.
Re-traumatized.
So how do you approach those people, then, that are stuck in those realms of reality?
You know, it's been very, very interesting. I spoke about a couple years ago, I still do a lot of philosophical work, and I spoke at the American Philosophical Association on exopolitics and psychopathology.
Uh-huh.
And
I was
very surprised with that there were psychologists and psychiatrists in attendance. The extreme degree lacking in the dialogue that the academics and the psychiatrists and the philosophers didn't even have the quantum vocabulary or the UFO extraterrestrial vocabulary, they didn't even have a framework to have a dialogue.
No, they don't. They don't. And neither does
and
people
so
who
the first
say this. I mean, neither do people like Ken Wilber, who I approached, who wrote his theory of everything, and I said, well, what do you think beyond this realm? Do you think there's a greater civilization? And he said, he basically said, no, you know, it sort of ends with the
fine.
Earth. So that's
yeah,
surprising.
That's fine. Yeah.
Well,
and so I just, you know, I think that we have our work cut out for us, quite frankly.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's education or transformation or the life that we are leading. And I think that a lot of transformation and breakthrough, and I love your term intervention. I love that. So I'm probably going to be using that, Alan, if that's okay.
You can.
The whole intervention model is the fact that we do model for each other. So if you're intervening for somebody in your family that has an alcohol problem and you're sitting there down in, you know, a six-pack every day and you think that you can control your drinking, well, you know, at some point you need to model for that other person, you know, these are the choices I'm going to make in my life. I'm going to be sober or whatever. And I think that we in the extraterrestrial UFO field in terms of exoconsciousness and exopolitics, we need to model ourselves in, you know, a higher, hold ourselves to a higher standard.
Well, I think your whole approach is very balanced. It's very holistic and something I think people can start to integrate. It's very refreshing to talk to you.
Thank you.
And because you really take a middle of a road approach. It's not just, oh, they hear and the government has to reveal their secrets. No, it's, you have to work on your own personal development. You have to be a model for change. You have to expand your own ability to perceive a greater reality. And then the world will change.
Absolutely.
You know?
I categorically believe that. And, you know, going into an institution as a warrior just causes more trauma.
Mm-hmm.
On every
right.
level. Now, I am a true believer, though. I'm going to make this clear. I'm a true believer that one of the first steps is disclosure in any kind of abuse. You have to get the secrets out. And
you
that's
have to get
what
exopolitics
is doing. Yeah, you have to get the secrets out. The second step, interestingly enough, is you as an individual or institutions need to admit how they have, over the years and over the decades and centuries, colluded with the secrecy.
Or been abusive in the case of trauma. They say, yes, we have done these things. So get the truth and then admit their faults. Yeah.
But the victims of the abuse also have to see how they are in a mind control system and how they are also colluding and cooperating with this victim attacker system. And they have to own their part in it. Or they will never
get out. And how do you suggest we do that as an exoculture?
Well, I think that we all have to look at our individual lives and our individual attitudes and say, is there any way in which I am colluding with the fear of extraterrestrial or star visitors or our culture becoming galactic?
Or choosing just to be asleep, yeah, which is, I guess, a collusion of sorts.
The collusion, sleep is an absolute collusion.
Oh, you know what?
And then when you get...
Yeah, go ahead.
Then when you're clear about where you have been colluding, then you begin to model yourself in a new way, and that's when you're able then to make a new reality, to make an extraterrestrial reality.
Mm.
But to, you know, attack and be violent and accusatory is, in many ways, a collusion.
Yeah.
You're just perpetuating that same energetic system.
Right, and it does take it takes all people to come forward. I mean, the only way reality really is going to change for the planet is when all people come to this understanding. It has to go down to the lowest common denominator on some level if it's going to change for everybody, if we're going to live in that new world.
But I also think that modeling is so powerful that when you and I and other people that we work with become clear about to what extent we have colluded and to what extent there has been secrecy and to what extent we have participated in it and been hesitant maybe about pointing it out or believing it or being awake to it, that as we move out of that and then go to the third stage of modeling an extraterrestrial reality, it really doesn't take very many people to model something to create a seismic effect.
Right. Well, this is
That's
what
my
I
belief.
Hope we're doing. We're almost out of time. Can you just give, like, the website a little bit also about the work you're doing with Edgar Mitchell?
Okay, I'm working with Edgar Mitchell on Quantrek. It's Quantrek.org, I believe it is. And you can go on there and see the scientists that we're working on. I actually just 2 days ago sent my information in, so I don't know if I'm up on the site yet, but I should be in, you know, the next few days. Terry Mansfield and myself as Peace Exoconsciousness Directors, so working with these physicists. My personal website is exoconsciousness.com, exoconsciousness.com, and the other site that I mentioned is ET Vote Now. So thanks for having me, Alan. I just
thank you.
Enjoyed
this has
it.
Been very enlightening for me. And
I love so many of your ideas. You're just such a
well,
a
I have a lot more that we'll talk about off the air because, you know, I have this whole idea of this really developing an exoculture which is based on the artist's perception of greater realities.
That is probably one of the most powerful things I've ever heard.
So we'll talk about that.
I'm in line with that and a believer in that.
Thank you, Rebecca. I've been talking to
Thank you, Alan.
Hardcastle from Exoconsciousness is her book, and Rebecca Hardcastle is her name, and you can look her up and Google her, and she has a great website, RebeccaHardcastle.com. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and if you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, and check my website, newrealities.com. This is Duke Williams with Night Before the Future.